Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Precision Oncology, Serving Urban, Suburban, and Rural Areas with Integrated Pathology, Imaging, and Precision Genomic Services. The presenters are Lori Brisbane, VP, Precision Medicine Texas Oncology, COO, Precision Health Informatics, LLC, Texas Oncology, PA, Dallas, Texas, and Trey Schuckert, Director, Precision Medicine Systems, Texas Oncology, PA, Dallas, Texas.
Okay, my name is Modena Henderson, and I'm Managing Partner with Beyond Results. We are focused on healthcare and laboratories and process improvement and more lean transformation. Today I have the honor of introducing our speakers. Trey Schuckert, who is the Director of Precision Medicine Systems in Texas Oncology PA in Dallas, Texas, as well as Lori Brisbane, VP of Precision Medicine in Texas Oncology and COO of Precision Health Informatics, LLC, also in Dallas, Texas. It's my pleasure to present you, and I think we need to work on this.
Let's see if we can help.
It was, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. Let me first start by telling you a little bit about Texas Oncology. Are any of you familiar with our practice? Okay, awesome. So we have a lot in common in that when we opened up our practice, right, it was in Dallas and Amarillo. So we thought, how are we going to bring the same service, level of care to Amarillo and to Dallas and then to Tyler and San Antonio? So this was 23 years ago, and when I talked to the founders of Texas Oncology, they literally would get on a plane and fly from Dallas to Amarillo to see patients, to run labs, et cetera. We've evolved a lot since then, obviously. We can do a lot more than getting on a plane and going to see our patients. For us, for precision medicine, we had to find a way that we could bring a fairly sophisticated, high-tech service, care service, to our patients, again, across the state of Texas, so without obviously getting on a plane. So we want to share with you a little bit today how we managed to standardize the use of precision medicine, to use it properly with the greatest efficiency across the entire state. And our whole goal is something that may resonate with all of you now, is equity of care. So now that we're all into social determinants of health, and we want to make sure with all the tools we have that we're maximizing the use of precision oncology. So we're going to talk to you about that today. Okay. I'm not going to read this slide to you, I promise. It's fairly explanatory. We talked a little bit about this. One thing that might change a little bit in your minds from a community oncology practice. So Texas Oncology, we'll talk a little bit about that, is a community oncology practice, owned and operated and governed by our providers. So those are our physicians. Now, of course, we have APPs and all sorts of other genetic counselors, all sorts of other capabilities. But a little bit different from the academic centers is the fact that we are a standalone practice that is nearly fully integrated. So that means we have medical oncology, we have surgical oncology, radiation oncology, palliative care, almost everything that we need to be fully integrated. What are we missing is what we call our back office functions, IT, finance, although none of us really miss finance if they were to go away. HR, I could say a similar thing there. But the biggest miss was IT, right? You can't do laboratory medicine anymore, precision medicine anymore, without IT, without data. Because of that, and I won't talk about that too much, but we also have a wholly owned subsidiary of Texas Oncology called Precision Health Informatics. And as you can imagine, as we started to gather all of our data, we ended up with a lot of data that I would say is in a data lake. And so because we had all this and we have such a demand for that internally and externally, we treat 4% of all cancer patients in the United States. We decided that we would try to maximize the use of that data. So today I'm going to talk about laboratory medicine, precision medicine, and integration. So as I said, we are one of the largest physician provider practices in the United States. We have over 500 physicians, 3,000 clinical employees. So that's the APPs, the genetic counselors, the nurse practitioners, and the laboratory scientists, and I know I'm missing all sorts of them. But the point is we have a huge ratio of support to clinicians. And that's great, but it's also not sustainable over time. I mean, for one thing, we're running out of space to build cancer centers, even in Texas. So we wanted to use the most of basically what Trey built in order to sort of reduce the personnel requirements, FTEs, that we need to care for this. 150 sites of service. We work with over 100 different pathology laboratories. So how do you speak? And, you know, one of my friend, we joke with her because we say, what did you want us to do? Send smoke signals. I mean, we have to be very advanced in this level, especially for precision medicine. So this is a little bit of the breakdown. We didn't actually put our PDONs, but now with so many of the pan-tumor indications for some of our therapeutics, we think we can apply precision medicine more to those patients. We do have two pediatric centers, Medical City Hospital, which is actually right across the street from our corporate headquarters, and then one up in Plano. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about our program. So if you look at how we treat cancer today, we can maybe break it down into four buckets. Now, the radons get upset because they're not really on here anywhere, but they should be on here, obviously. We're going to focus, what our group focuses on is targeted therapies and immunotherapy. So we leave the chemotherapy at this moment in time to the medical oncologist, and we're just supporting that precision oncology aspect. The surgery, a little bit we leave to the surgeons, but now we're looking at different molecular signatures and markers that show us maybe progression of disease before an image would, an MRI. I mean, the jury's still out on that, and the NCCN calls that clinical investigational, but it is actually, there are some of those tests FDA approved on the market. This is just an example of when NCCN and FDA don't agree. It's very similar to when the CDC doesn't agree with, well, anybody, but it's just like that with the government agencies. So I'll start with a little bit about I was a laboratorian for years. I worked at Roche Diagnostics for 13 years, worked at Roche Molecular, worked at a lab called Caris Life Sciences, MedFusion, in different roles. I stole most of the people on my precision oncology team from the lab. My boss said, I want you to build a precision medicine program for the community oncology setting, which again, not academic. He explained to me that you're used to being the egg and we're the bacon. So I don't really know what that meant. I don't really understand half of what he says, but I pretend I do. But so what that means is, you know, the egg is involved, but the pig is committed, right? So you are involved. The patients are committed. Our patients really need us to be good at this. And so he explained the difference between, I know you liked, you know, to do this and you like this tool and you like that tool. Don't bring anything into our practice that doesn't improve patient care. So that's how we built the program. Is it working yet?
No, it's worse.
Okay, I'm going to try to remember what my... I haven't actually looked at this presentation in 2 weeks, so I'm just going to try to remember what it said. So we started it in 1999. We had three pillars with our program. We had one of them, patient care. The second one was research, getting our patients into clinical trials. And that was huge, and it remains huge. though if you look at the number of patients we as a practice put into clinical trials, if we broke that down into per physician, it's awful. And it's less than one per physician. Now, can you imagine if you had 500 physicians, just one patient in the trial? Of course, we have a research group that's dedicated to that. But what they would say to us all the time is, I don't know how to find a non-small cell lung cancer patient with KRAS G12C. I promise that's the last gene I talk about today. And so we had to make it easier to find this needle in the haystack. We have 2 million patient records that exist across 13 different databases. We interact with 9 different laboratories, CARES Foundation. We also look at germline, and we look at pathology. Again, 100 different hospitals. This is what I was talking about before. And so, again, we go back to we need to interface this. We need to have a way that we can transfer knowledge, orders, results, searchable databases for everyone, for people like me who don't even know how to make a pivot chart. Our doctors don't even know Excel, so no judging there. And so we looked at what those common barriers were. What is it going to take for us to put together a program in the provider setting? Obviously, education is a huge one. I'm not going to talk about that today, though I will tell you that a lot of these tools have become educational. But think about it. We have analytical IT solutions. We have other areas that we need to focus on. We talked about targeted therapy. We talked about immunotherapy. But there are so many things. The coolest thing for me right now is radio-labeled therapy. So instead of targeting a drug at a tumor cell, we can actually target radiation, a radio label, at the tumor cell, release that label, and avoid all of the normal tumor cells. And so for brain cancer and things like that, this is going to be, I think, a huge tool. Prostate cancer will have way less side effects. So we thought about, all right, what do we need to do? And you can see the bottom. Lack the necessary data to conduct precision medicine, and clearly this would relate to clinical trials. Huh. Okay, so we had five, remember, my boss said, do not bring anything into our organization that is not going to improve patient care. We had no budget. This is why I don't like finance, and I apologize to anybody in here who is finance. In a way, I apologize. But we literally did not have any budget. We are provider practice. We worked off of the providers. So every time we purchased something, it was like taking money out of their back pocket. And they would let you know. So the first thing that we needed to do was put together a clinical decision support tool. There are all these different labs that we work with, and it's necessary because none of the labs are the same. I think you would agree. We have different tumor types. We're not an academic setting. We're community oncology. We treat all-comer tumors. Though we do have specialists in breast cancer, ovarian cancer, we have gynecs. Lung cancer, we have specialists. But for the most part, most of our 500 providers treat cross-tumor type. Think about the NCCN guidelines and what is required to do the proper testing and then the proper treatment. It's by tumor type. Even though we look at cancer as a genetic disease, and even though it is a genetic disease, and even that's what precision medicine is, we still consider the tumor of origin. So when our physicians think about ordering a test, they need to have some support. This is my patient. They have this tumor type. They have this stage of disease. These are the required biomarkers by some evidence-based medicine. Here are the different options that are out in the laboratories, and then that order goes to the laboratory electronically. I don't know if this will surprise you, but up until 3 years ago, and still in some laboratories, people are filling out paper recs that take, like, a lot of time, faxing them in to not secured fax machines. You know, when fax machines get moved, the fax goes to wherever that went, wherever that line went. So this is obviously a huge problem. We want the order to go in electronically. And I will tell you that when somebody goes outside of Trapelo, where we order and send the orders electronically with the support of LK Caraball. I don't know if you call that anymore. Do you call it that anymore? Oh, you do? Okay. We have less human error. We can track what order was sent. We have a date and a time stamp. We can put that into the EMR, and the data is going to come back electronically. So the order goes in electronically, and the data comes back electronically. data in precision medicine is a little bit difficult, right? So you basically have PDFs. So we call that non-structured data. So that means somewhere in our iKnowMed system, we use iKnowMed. We call it iKnowNot, but anyways, we use iKnowMed. And it comes in as a PDF, but it can go like 4 or 5 different places in that patient's chart. It could go on any date. It could go anywhere. So now you're a physician. You're like, I need to get more patients in trials. How do I do that? Precision oncology. I need this specific variant. How the heck am I going to find that looking through a bunch of PDFs in a longitudinal patient chart for, 10, 15 patients a day, right? So if we're seeing 75,000 new cancer patients every year, that's a lot of patients per day. We would rather that they find these patients using the support tools that we have, spend that time pre-screening those patients to get them into trials. So that is, did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Here. So this is what our Trapelo and our LK Caraval tool does. It creates a searchable database. So again, our physicians who know nothing about IT can go in. They ordered it, they put in the MRN number and the patient's name, 2 unique identifiers. When they want to go see the results, they put in the MRN number for the patient and the date of birth. Those results come up and they say, okay, so Johnny Brown has these different variants, and it says right there, KRAS G12C. You don't have to pull up a PDF report. You can see it right there without moving anything on your screen. You can also say, give me all my patients with KRAS G12C. We have pan-tumor. Am I doing that again? We have pan-tumor indications now, so I don't care if it's lung or colorectal or pancreatic. I just want you to show me all of them. Okay, so now look, Mr. Who do I want to talk about? Marathi, because we have a really close relationship with Marathi. I have 15 patients, and they say, this is great. Send us over their lab results. Well, on that same tool, what is still the gold standard? PDF, right? Because we're working with pharma companies. They're sort of, we talk about that in a minute. They're sort of behind the curve on this. So now they can go into one database, searchable database, know who to find, grab that PDF, and send it all by email to our pre-screeners. We could not do that before, right? We have 400,000 unique patients with molecular profiles. So when somebody says, hey, do you have this like rare STK11, KRAS G12C? I don't know, but we will just put it into Caraval and boom, they come up and we say, oh, we have 30 of them. And then who are the treating physicians? Well, here's the treating physicians. Where do the patients live? Here's their zip codes. And this is, again, our physicians, and we need to make it easy for them. Are there any physicians in here that I'm completely offending? Awesome. Okay, so the other things I'm not going to talk about is we have a molecular data warehouse that contains all sorts of stuff that we use for research. We just put together a molecular tumor board, which is for education and also getting patients into clinical trials. Am I almost done? Are you going to tell me when I'm halfway through? Because again, probably 2024, 2025, I think the next 5 years, our goal is to get as many clinical oncology patients, community oncology patients in clinical trials. So about 80% of patients, cancer patients, are treated in the community setting. That's a lot. What percent of those patients go into clinical trials? Less than 10%. Guess where the clinical trials are closing and can't even take any more volume? The academic centers. So we at Texas Oncology, working with all sorts of other people, Sarah Cannon and others, are working really hard to put together the things that we need to disseminate clinical trials. Remember what we talked about? Equity of care. Every single page of the NCCN guidelines say, consider a clinical trial for your patient. Well, how can we do that? More than half the trials now are targeted therapies or immunotherapies. We need to find these needles in a haystack. Caraval and Trapelo allow us to do that. I don't know if you care about this so much. We had an initiative that said, okay, we're not testing as many people as we need to. How can we increase that testing? Because if we don't test for them and find these targeted variants, then we can't treat them with targeted therapy. So we figured we were about half, I think it was half our docs think it was like 75%, but we're not testing all of our non-small cell lung cancer patients, which is crazy, right? Like everybody would think, well, they need to at least have an EGFR and a KRAS or a PD-L1 if you stay up at late at night and think that Pembro is, you know, the silver bullet. So we looked and we used CareEvolve. So we partnered with pharma. We can test. We're geneticists and we're IT people and we're lab people. But we can't tell people how to treat their patients. We have our own pharmacy. Remember we told you we were fully integrated almost without the IT stuff. So we have our own pharmacy. And what we did is we partnered with our pharmacists. What did we use? We used CareEvolve. So we would ping the pharmacist and said, hey, this patient did not get a test ordered. Do not prescribe them chemo until they at least order the test. Now, did we actually not prescribe anybody chemo? Like, I doubt it. But it was like the threat of it. Then we came out with dashboards that said, look, this region is doing this, and this region is doing this. I'm going the other way. Sorry. So we basically told them, here is your competition. And it was really awesome to show them that in some of these rural areas, the valley, look at how the valley increased percent-wise in ordering and test ordering versus Dallas. So that was awesome. So we were able to test, we were able to order testing, we were able to get the results to them discreetly, easily, in a way they can search them. We have the PDFs so that the pharma companies can go back to, again, gold standard, what is that called? Gold standard, whatever. We provided with information in a searchable way that they can use. And again, we brought these tools in on a shoestring budget. LK walked us hand by hand. Is Philip here? He really is the most patient person on the planet. He really held our hand, helped us to normalize across all of these different labs. Was very, very willing to work with us. I am going to, can I hand this over to you now? Or do you want me to do this one?
Slide, but I can.
One thing. So here's our databases. I didn't put them all because you probably don't care about the financial ones after I've already told you about our finance department. We had to find a way to link three or four of these different things. So once we got the reference labs in there, like we outsourced all of our precision medicine testing, we thought, well, what else could we get in there? So the next thing that we're putting in there are just the general lab results, CBCs. This is super, super important in oncology. They look at the CBCs every week, every 2 weeks. They could pull up that patient's name and look at not only their precision medicine stuff, but they can look at their CBCs. And again, finding that stuff in iKnowMed is not that easy. So this is what we've been working, is developing this patient-centric longitudinal database that we can track each unique patient over time. This is, I'm going to pass this to you for sure. So let me pass this to Trey, because he's the one who built this. So it was basically Philip and Trey, and they're both very patient people. But let me turn it over to him now.
Sure.
And now don't use them. Good luck.
All right. So 5 years ago, we really, as Lori was talking about, there was not much integration. It wasn't easy to order tests for our cancer patients. We weren't collecting the data. Nothing was standardized or normalized in terms of testing, and so we had to reach out and, you know, find a solution. And that's where LK came into the picture. So I'll start with this slide that you left off on. So we've been using LK for a number of things, mostly for, you know, integration. They're able to connect all of our systems together, internal systems, external systems. Yeah, this just clicks on its own. I blame it on the laptop dropping earlier. And so, you know, with the help of LK, we were able to connect our EMR to all of the laboratories that we work with. So at the ease of a button, we can get orders sent to lab one, lab two, lab three. They send the results back. We collect the data. It just makes things so much easier for us to work with. This is just a screenshot of, this screenshot of CareEvolve. This is how we collect the data. So as you can see, these are all just terms that come in through results. BRAF. So as we work with each lab, we will, you know, set up an order interface, a results interface, and as we receive the results back, this would be what all the different BRAF genes, for example, would look like. And so then we can go into this database and search for BRAF, and it's going to pull up every single patient that has a BRAF result. For example, if you did just a BRAF search, you can see we have fusions not detected, wild types. Down here we have I know it's small, but it says pathogenic variant, and then it goes into the actual details about that mutation. Wow, this is difficult. I think I'm just going to unplug this. No clicker. All right. And then there's a lot of validation involved to ensure that the data that we are collecting from the labs through the interface actually matches what they're sending on the PDF report. So that took a lot of effort, but we're now at the point where we have bidirectional, meaning orders and results, all electronic, orders going out, results coming in, all through electronic interface with, I think, 7-8 different laboratories, all through LK. And that really just simplifies the ability to get the orders out the door and get the results back. Do you want to talk about this one?
Sorry. I just wanted to show you this because we've been talking about all this interfacing between LK and the labs and LK and IMS. Why did we do this? There was no, and still to this day, ability to order directly into our EMR. We cannot order precision medicine tests, any outside reference lab test, through the EMR. We can't receive the results back directly into the EMR. And so that's why, okay, I call it like the union station for precision medicine, because the trains come in, the trains go out, results go in, results come back. Why is it important is we adhere to something that many, many community oncology and academic practices adhere to, and that's clear value plus. So what that means is there's a list of drugs. Your patient comes in, you have clinical symptomology, adverse events, tumor time. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
You're going to be on record.
Oh, I'm from New York. This year.
And so we have all of this information that comes in to guide our physicians on the different options, treatment options. So I wanted to show you this here, and you can see it's pretty specific. The issue is it doesn't include the biomarker information. So where you have that thing that says ER status, PR status, HER2 status, you probably know what estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor is. The physician had to put that in there by hand in order to triage their treatment pathways. The easiest thing for the physician to do is to go click, 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 don't know. And then pull up every single thing that they might want to treat with. But here, this is breast cancer with trastuzumab. You're not going to treat with Herceptin without HER2 overexpressed. So this was the huge link that our physicians were not using targeted therapies as much because the EMR wasn't telling them what the targets were. So this is why we call LK, Caravolve, Orbin, whatever you call it. This is why we call it that, because that is our union station for precision medicine.
Okay, so when I joined Texas Oncology 5-ish years ago, we developed out our precision medicine, our precision oncology workflow. And it took a lot of brainstorming and required, you know, partnerships with LK, partnerships with our clinical decision support tool, data engineers. And so all of this really kind of just outlines the process that we consider, that we put into consideration when designing this workflow. So, you know, it starts with the provider, the decision to treat a patient. And, you know, the provider, they're busy. The physicians are busy. They just want to spend time with their patients, make sure they're treating them well. When it comes to actually placing a molecular order, like a comprehensive genomic profile, you know, they don't always know which labs are testing what genes or what biomarkers, what the turnaround times are, QNS rates, whether or not we're getting the data. They just want to get the order submitted. So we started with the clinical decision support tool, which makes it really just easy to get the right testing for our patient, and I can go into that on the next page. We also created a precision oncology liaison team, and that is basically a group of clinical liaisons who work with the providers. They work with the pathology labs, which is where all of our tissue specimens for our patients are located. They work with the clinics, and they just help ensure that the orders get sent out, that the results get back, and that any complication or something that requires a phone call, they take care of that just to make sure that the patient gets the result back in a timely manner. We work with the reference labs, partnerships, and once again, you know, QNS rates, turnaround times, making sure that they're testing for all the right biomarkers that should be tested for our patients. And then we capture that data back into LK and into our molecular data warehouse for clinical trials, real-time alerts for our physicians, et cetera. And then that leads to obviously the physician getting the best treatment option for our patients. So this is a screenshot of our clinical decision support tool, Trapelo, that we use. We made it as simple as possible for our physicians, or nurses, whoever's going in and submitting that order. Just asked a couple questions, you know, what cancer type does your patient have? What is the stage of the disease for that patient? Once these first two are selected, it goes off NCCN, FDA, guidelines to determine what are the biomarkers, the genes that should be tested for that patient. So for non-small cell lung cancer, it's going to give you the list of genes that are recommended for testing. And then there will also be some opt-in markers that could be tested. And once those are selected, here you go, routine markers, so ALK rearrangement, BRAF, EGFR, opt-in, for example, tumor mutation burden. And once those are selected, it's going to list the laboratories that we work with, that we partner with, to give an option to send that testing to that laboratory. And then we also have the ability to add attachments. So that could be a pathology report, that could be office notes, something that just helps with the testing laboratory to procure that specimen from the lab. All right, so I talked a little bit about the precision oncology liaison. And so they are there, they're kind of that center point between the ordering provider, the testing laboratory, the pathology labs, and they just know, you know, working with each of the labs, like what are the testing that they offer? What is their turnaround time? Are they meeting expectations or not? If there's an issue with the tissue specimen at the hospital that's not getting delivered to the lab promptly, you know, they reach out and they help facilitate that process. They work closely with the labs to know exactly what their status is in-network, out-of-network for our patients, so that if it comes down to making a decision on which lab, maybe there's two labs that both offer similar testing, you know, let's get the order to the lab that's not going to have a huge financial burden for our patient. I think I talked about this a little bit already, but we quarterly meet with our reference lab partners just to ensure that they continue to meet quality metric expectations. We look at utilization rates for our testing, turnaround time, and that's both for the procurement of the specimen, but also the amount of time it takes to get the results sent back to us. We look at QNS rates, patient out-of-pocket expenses, and then we also, you know, consider what are all the type of testing that they do. Do they offer somatic versus germline testing, tissue versus liquid? How large are their panels? You know, is it a large genomic comprehensive profile with 500 plus genes, or is it more of a lung specific type of panel? And then we also ensure, and this might be, at least for me, one of the most important things, is their integration capabilities. Are they able to accept an electronic order and deliver back us the results electronically? Because, you know, we are trying to get away from anything paper. Paper requisitions, faxing, anything like that. It takes time to fill that out. You're going to have inconsistencies with what's being entered, We're not able to capture or collect that data into our systems. Most importantly, it's that time. The time it takes to fill out a paper requisition or even go onto to a labs portal to enter that information. I mean, I think there was an example where I was working with one of our liaisons. It would take 15 to 20 minutes just to submit an order on their portal. And when we set up these integrations, and we can cut that time down to minutes, two minutes max, just to click a couple buttons and get the order sent out the door. So one of the things we do is we look at each reference lab and we just kind of create a scorecard. Do they have a data exchange available? So that would be like your bidirectional interface. What type and what does it look like? So we have, HL7s. That's kind of our, what we call our ideal solution. But then we also, if we need to, because some labs that we work with may not have that solution readily available, is we'll come up with like kind of more of a secure, in SFTP, a secure file transfer, where we can at least get them an order sent to them and get the results back, and we're not dealing with, paper requisitions, emails, faxing, any of that kind of stuff that's really not that secure. We also want to ensure we're getting the PDFs and structured data if possible. PDFs are the easiest thing to get. Sometimes structured data takes a little more effort, but we'll take this step by step and work with each lab to get to a point where we have yeses all across the board. And then as we capture that data, we work with each lab to send back. If they're able to send back that structured data, we'll then capture it and have it in a usable format. If we're able to capture that data, it's going to come back to us in real time. That's the first pro. If we can get that data as soon as the testing is completed, that result will come back to us as soon as it's signed out by the lab, and we can get that data into our database. We can then have, physicians, research, whoever can go in and immediately find that data, those results. We store this in our information system, EMR, data warehouse, et cetera. Let's see here. So another thing that we're doing with our database is not only the results data, but we're also connecting all of our systems together. So we'll have our EMR, we'll have the data from our EMR, we'll have the data from our, patient demographic system, data from our LIS, and we've created, sort of a database that pulls it all together. So if you want to find a patient that has a certain result, we can pull that result from our LK database. If we then want to, from those patients that have a certain result, want to find, all right, which patients have a certain insurance, well, then we can pull that from our insurance database. And then if we want to see out of those patients, which patients are on a certain treatment plan or, have a certain, piece of data that comes from our EMR, we'll pull that in as well from our EMR database. And then we can really start to capture and collect all of the necessary data needed. So I'm just going to go into a little bit about our journey, where we started and how we got to where we are today. So 5 years ago, as Lori was sort of talking about, we really didn't have any good IT solutions, at least when it comes to, ordering tests, getting results back. We had a lot of unstructured data, which required, if we really wanted to do a study and look to see what kind of data we had, it required a lot of manual curation. Eyes on paper, looking at results, writing it down, or putting it into an Excel spreadsheet. Not ideal at all. How did we order our biomarkers? Well, it was just whatever the doctors wanted to order, right? One doctor might order EGFR by itself for their lung cancer patient, where another doctor might order a larger panel with 500 plus genes. But there was no real standardization around that. When you think about our Texas oncology practice, I mean, Texas is an enormous state, and we've got locations all across Texas. And so there's not really an easy way to standardize these processes. And so, it kind of took this new team to form, this precision medicine team, to help facilitate all of this. I kind of talked about Excel spreadsheets for the database design, and then lab integration, as I said, paper fax. So it, we started, we wanted to get, you know, more standardization, we wanted to get better integration, better automation, and so we had our, you know, from our unstructured data, manual curation, we then, you know, looked into natural language processing, which was a good step in the right direction, but now we're in our current state, we're also, we now have some AI tools that help pull that unstructured data into structured data. Biomarker ordering, you know, started with no standardization at all. Then we implemented our clinical decision support tool and slowly worked. We started with just a few cancer types, but now we're at the point where we're dealing with just about all cancer types that exist. We're looking at, you know, somatic testing, germline testing, tissue testing, germ, liquid testing, et cetera. And we also have the liaison team that helped facilitate all of this as well. And then from a database design, you know, we went from Excel spreadsheets to having a SQL database, our own molecular data warehouse, and now we're connecting all of our databases together. And from an integration standpoint, paper fax, to getting it to a point where we're doing HL7, SFTP, and all different types of formats. So when the Precision Oncology Liaison Team came into action, you can see back in 2020, we started with a beta pilot for our clinical decision support tool. We did about, I think we did 2 orders on the first day with just a handful of physicians. We got that up to about 500 orders a month. And then we've slowly been increasing every single month all the way to where we are now in March. And I think if we put April on here, it would be even higher. And so we're just continuing to see more and more support with ordering through our clinical decision support, which once again is meaning we're capturing data. We're making it easier for our physicians to place orders, better care for our patients. So we're heading in the right direction. This is just an example of the type of cancer types that we have within our clinical decision support. You know, we mostly treat breast cancer, non-small cell lung cancer, colorectal cancer, and then there's some other pockets there as well. All right, so what are our goals for the future? We want to continue to improve our clinical decision support tools. You know, right now we have somatic testing mostly, but we want to get to the point where we include germline testing, heme testing, really any type of testing that's going to be crucial to our patients' treatments. We want to test for all types of patients, all diseases, not just the common ones, but the rare ones as well. And then we also want to implement some sort of clinical decision support tool for therapy so that not only are we getting the right orders sent out for our patients, but then when those results come back, we're getting the right treatment plans. We want to enhance our clinical trial database. That's probably the biggest challenge. So when we work with each lab, they have their own way of testing, their own way of collecting and sending data. There's really no standardization. There hasn't been until fairly recently, where I've seen more and more labs kind of get onto this new HL7 variant structure, where they're listing out the gene name, what the protein DNA alteration is, really all those components that are important. And they're sending it, they're starting to send them in similar formats where we can then at least work through that and have a standardized way of how we are, you know, working with that data. Up until recently, we would have lab one, which would, you know, send it in like a paragraph. Maybe lab two would send it somewhat discreetly, but not completely. Lab three just sends it as a PDF. And we have to do use our own tools and efforts to kind of get the data to how we want it. But in an ideal world, and I think where we're heading, is that all labs will get on the same page and be able to send data in the same format. This will obviously help the way that patients are getting tested correctly, getting the right treatments, the way data is collected, et cetera. And then diagnosis data. You know, that's an important thing that we're looking to collect. I got 5 minutes, so let me try to get through. I think I got one more slide, so that's good. So one of the things we're working with LK right now is developing out this clinical database. And so, you know, standardizing the way we get the data is part one, but then we're also looking to what are the other important components that we want to put into that database. Some of it's not just from the results, but it's also from the order that we send. So when Trapelo, or Clinical Decision Support Tool, sends the order, we want to make sure we're collecting the right data into that same database that we're getting the results back so that we can marry the two together and really have actionable results, actionable data to use. We want to make it easier to use the database so that whether it's somebody with a really strong technical background or someone that isn't very tech savvy would be able to go in there and look for exactly what they're looking for. So if they want to look for any of the patients that have a specific gene mutation, they could just click a couple buttons, press enter, and boom, there's all the data. Let's see here. And then we want to increase our data integration and interoperability. So we kind of have a homegrown tracker application that we use today to keep monitor of the orders that we're sending, when the results come back, when the specimen was received by the laboratory, and it works really great. But in an ideal world, all of this would be connected to together. So when the order is sent, we would immediately, see it in the application that the order was submitted. When the specimen is received from the laboratory, we'd immediately get a new status that says, okay, specimen is received. And when the result is completed, whether it's, the preliminary result or the final result, we would get all of these status updates in real time and would be able to keep track of all of this. And then just continue to work with both our internal systems and our external systems to improve integration and interoperability. All right, I think that's all I have. Okay. Yeah, any questions?
Are you tying into patient outcomes or anything like that with this?
Yeah, we are. And once again, that kind of goes to the disparate systems. We do have our own patient outcomes database. And so now it's really just how do we tie it all together so that we have it all in one easy, accessible solution.
In the short period of time, are you able to see any improvements on patient outcomes using the data?
Yes. So when we look at our clinical, when we look at those 13 different databases that we have together in this data lake, what we can search for whatever, right? So we've had a couple different publications in breast cancer looking at a certain variant and how many patients did we treat with that variant, how many were represented in the clinical trial, how many different variants were not represented in the clinical trial that we treated with. Oh, by the way, did that targeted therapy work? What are the outcomes? And so we're looking at things like progression-free survival, overall survival, duration of line of therapy, duration of therapy, et cetera. The biggest thing right now for everybody is dosing, either dosing up or dosing down. And so every pharma company wants to know, when you have adverse events in the real world, what do you do? Do you go on a drug holiday? Do you take them off the drug? Do you reduce the dose? And by the way, the clinical trials are looking at maximum dose tolerable. So maximum tolerable dose. So when they go into their clinical trials, they got one shot at it. So they're going to go with the highest dose they can, with the healthiest patients that they can, because it's basically, what is that? Ringer. It's a ringer, right? It's not the real world. The patients are not as sick as they are when they come into the practice. So we're left with not sick patients. How do they respond at this highest efficiency dose? When we see sick patients, we would like to say, what's the lowest efficient dose? So that we don't have to give them, just like a huge amount, have them get side effects, go on drug holiday. So right now what we do in the real world is we start out with what the label says and we bring it down. When we go back up, that's new data. That's data that wasn't in the package insert for the drug. They want that data. And so what we do is we provide that data, again, with lots of different patients across the duration of that patient's paradigm. So are we getting clinical outcomes? Yes.
We have more projects right now than we have people, but that's not because of the LK stuff. It's not for lack of getting the data in there or getting the patient orders. It's for lack of being able to interrogate that. We are working with a company who shall remain nameless because we don't have a contract with them yet, but it really allows us to do a lot more with this kind of data. Do you want to take more questions or no?
Yes,
one more. Yes. All this integration is very impressive. How do you see this impacting social determinants of health?
Well, input is input and output is output, right? So when we looked at what data do we collect across the practice, we don't even know what race and ethnicities we want to use. And by the way, again, neither does the government. So we call races this, we call ethnicities this, different sites call it differently. So what we've really had to do is add race, ethnicity, transform that to what is standard now, what is normalized now. The social determinants of health is a huge thing. We have a system called ePROS, Electronic Patient Reported Outcomes. And from there, we capture lots of information, right? So what do you do for a living? How far do you have to travel to your clinic? And all of that is collected on an iPad. The patient sends it in. How are you feeling today? You know, whatever the case may be. Why didn't you take your drugs? Like, reminder, take your drugs. Like, orals are good, but not, I mean, how many of you take, you know, a leave every day when you should? It's the same thing. Does it answer your question?
Yeah.
He has. Can we just do one more? See, everything can be done in an app. We don't think we're going to need lawyers anymore because we think that chat is just going to take all of the legal folks and put them out of business. Okay. Thank you all so much. Thanks for coming.
So thank you, Lori and Trey. You can put your feedback in and your survey comments in the app.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.